Gabe, I appreciate the introduction to foliar diseases. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the same diseases that Gabe just mentioned briefly, just kind of a backdrop to what we're going to talk about with regard to some fungicide trials that were conducted across the belt. This is a compilation of many studies conducted across the cotton belt over the last several years. In total, I received data sets for about 30 to 35 trials, summarized those data sets, and put them together for this presentation, so hand selecting specific trials from across the belt. I appreciate the contributions from the colleagues listed on the title slide. Again, Gabe did a really good job of giving an introduction. For the duration of this presentation, I'll give a backdrop to the leaf spot diseases. Several fungi that Gabe mentioned are known to cause leaf spot disease, primarily Alternaria, Cercospora, and Stemphylium are your three major causal agents. Again, here's just an example of that symptomology that you see associated with those. You have cotton plants with leaves with spots on them. As this disease develops, you can get severe defoliation, as we see here. Typically, what we see in West Texas, and like Gabe alluded to earlier, the disease is associated with stresses, specifically this potassium deficiency. I've seen specific examples of drought stressing plants and then resulting in substantial disease development late in the season following heavy rains. Also, there's been a relationship with maturity. As plants are finishing up and at cut out, you may see the potassium deficiency may be greater to fill out seed, and you may have a limited potassium situation late in the season, and we typically see leaf spot associated with late season cut out or maturity. Fortunately, these diseases are occurring late in the season, and the epidemics that do occur have very limited time to impact yield. What we're worried about is this potential for defoliation. This picture was taken in a field this last growing season in Turkey, Texas. A producer called and said he had substantial defoliation out in the field. Again, you can see this is quite late in the season. The chances of that impacting yield is probably pretty limited. What we are concerned about is getting these epidemics taking place earlier. Like we see here, this picture was taken in 2006. Substantial defoliation, infections taking place that first week of September. Severe drought stress, moderate water irrigation. This was a train wreck, substantial disease there. And I'm not sure what the final yields were on that field, but it was quite damaging. With regard to the leaf spots, they've been reported in all states or all areas where cotton is grown. We do see yield reductions typically in Arizona, more commonly in Arizona, also in Africa and other countries where cotton is produced. More recently, the fungicides Headline, Pyraclostrobin, and Quadris Azoxystrobin have been labeled for use in cotton, and they've been evaluated in areas with regard to leaf spot. In addition to the leaf spot, I'll follow Gabe's example, and I'll briefly mention the boll rots, but focus primarily on leaf spot data. In addition to the leaf spots, we have numerous fungi that are associated with boll rots of cotton, Alternaria, again, which can cause foliar diseases as well. The Glomerella, Ascochyta, Diploidia, and Foma species can cause boll rots, which can substantially reduce yield and impact the quality of the fiber. More importantly, hardlock of cotton, which has shown up on the scene over the last several years, has been increasingly confusing, maybe, or I'm not sure the increasing in prevalence, but there has been some work done on hardlock with regard to fungicides and the association of Fusarium species with certain flower visiting thrips species. With regard to hardlock, Topsin M, which is thiophanate methyl, has been evaluated, and we'll report on some of the results from studies across the belt. The overall objective of this presentation is to simply summarize some of the data that's out there with regard to fungicide use in cotton and present it with regard to fungicides from a belt-wide standpoint. Overall, there were really no truly light trials throughout the data set that I have. What I did is basically summarized all the data that I got. All of these are replicated field trials throughout the belt through 2004 and 2008, looking at various aspects of using foliar fungicides, either the number of applications, the fungicide rate, or application timing. And again, I think this application timing is going to be is probably where we need to spend a little more time in evaluating the use of these fungicides in the future based on the results we'll see in a few minutes. Each of the trial was analyzed independently and using analysis of variance. Yield and disease assessments were made and analyzed. We'll focus primarily on yield and talk a little bit about the resulting disease within those trials. The plot sizes were all over the board, anywhere from 35 feet in two rows by 35 feet in length to four rows by the length of the field, which in some cases could be several hundred feet. 3 to 6 replications. For the sake of ease of presentation, I think we'll focus on trials that include headline, quadris, and topsin, just for sake of presentation. The subsequent slides will be set up in a similar fashion. Again, the state where the trials were conducted, that trial number, and the cooperator in the year. On the y-axis, we'll have either disease or some parameter of yield, be it seed cotton or lint yield. And on the x-axis, we'll have the fungicide treatments. Some of these can be quite complicated because some fungicide treatments have multiple rates made with multiple applications. All that will be denoted here on the y-axis. With regard to disease, the lower right-hand corner will give the range of disease specified for that trial. So in this trial conducted by Kathy Lawrence, there was essentially no disease or no appreciable levels of disease associated in that trial. And what we see here is the three fungicides evaluated performed statistically similar to the untreated control, which is denoted by the dashed line. No significant differences in the 2008 trial in Alabama. Moving on to Florida, and the states are just listed alphabetically. Moving on to Florida, Jim Rawah has some data that he provided me with regard to hardlock. On this column here, we have two tests, essentially, an early planted test and a late planted test. We can see a significant reduction in hardlock symptomology compared to the untreated control, where we used 2 and 4 applications of topsin. And that did correspond to some differences with regard to yield, where we did see a significant increase in yield where he used that 4 applications of topsin M in this hardlock trial. Dr. Bob Kimmerite from the University of Georgia, he and Pat Phipps probably have the most detailed and extensive data sets with regard to foliar applications of fungicides. Bob's provided me with several years worth of data here. 2004 and 2007, where we essentially have a control headline at 9.2 fluid ounces, the 6.14 fluid ounces of headline, and then quadris at 6 ounces. In 2004, 2005, and 2006, as well as 2007, which is missing the 9 fluid ounces of headline, similar overall story there with regard to the results. We see numeric differences in yield, but no significant differences with regard to using these fungicides over the control. I believe, Bob, this was an aerial mildew trial that Bob had in 2007, where we did see significant differences, or he did see significant differences. I don't want to take your credit, Bob. In 2007, he did see significant differences with regard to using fungicides in this situation. The untreated control, we're looking about 85% to 90% defoliation, significantly reduced with the use of any of the fungicides. The headline and the quadris were statistically lower at the bottom with about 12% to 15%. So that's very promising, some biological activity using these fungicides with regard to disease development. However, that did not translate to any differences in yield. And again, this is very similar to the types of situations that I've seen in West Texas, where we do have diseases show up late in the season. We may be able to impact the development of disease, but there may not be the ability to capture any value from an increase in yield. Boyd Paget also has a pretty extensive data set from Louisiana. Boyd provided me with several years worth of data, multiple locations. Again, I just arbitrarily chose several examples to include here for sake of presentation. As far as seed quality here, the hardlock in this situation was the primary disease. Disease ranged from 10.9 to 13%, and there was no statistical differences among any of the treatments. And that corresponded nicely to no significant differences with regard to yield. We do see a numerical increase here with 2 applications of quadris, but again, that is not significant at the 5% level. Again, another trial from Boyd in 2006, again with lower rates or lower ranges of hardlock. They're not significantly impacted by treatment. Again, same result, no differences in yield. Numerical, but not significant, statistically significant, different. Similar trend in 2007, looking at 1, 2, and 3 applications of headline. Again, numerical trend here for 3 applications, but nothing that's significant. We're at 4 to 8% hard lock, and I believe the leaf spot in these trials were minimal. Here's a trial from Gabe in Mississippi that was conducted last year. These data are the means of 16 observations pulled across different treatments. And again, similar trend. There was no appreciable levels of disease in the trial. The Quadris and the headline and the flint did not differ significantly with regard to seed cotton from the untreated control. Melvin Newman provided me a trial from 2008, again in Tennessee, similar trend. Melvin did indicate that all fungicide treatments did result in improved disease control. Disease ranged from 1.3 for the lowest treatment to 5.3% disease in the untreated control. So he did see biological activity on disease development, but that did not correspond to a significant difference in yield. Some of the data that I'm a little more familiar with, having conducted myself, in 2007, I started doing fungicide trials, continued those in 2008, took the advantage of some of the treatments that Bob and Boyd have already out there and tried to increase the number of locations and environments where these fungicides were evaluated. Typically, the disease development we see in West Texas is pretty intermittent, so we looked more at the plant health attribute of using some of these fungicides in cotton. So what we have here are like treatments with a non-treated control, headline and Quadris at 6 or 9 ounces, 1 or 2 applications. Where we have the headline at 9 ounces at first bloom, headline at 6 ounces at first bloom, headline at 9 ounces at first bloom, and then followed that by a 14-day interval, and then Quadris at first bloom at 6 ounces. And we see again in all four trials, no significant differences with regard to yield. There was no appreciable levels of disease in these trials. What we did see an impact with was regard to irrigation, where we have a non-irrigated control. As we moved into a row water system, we did see a significant increase with regard to yield. A low capacity pivot was a little bit better than the row water situation, but we saw a substantial difference with regard to the high capacity pivot. A little bit of the experimental design behind these, the non-irrigated row water situation and the non-irrigated and the row water situation were 4 rows by about 770 feet. The low capacity pivot and the was four rows by 50 feet with 5 replications, and then again the high capacity pivot was 4 rows by 100 feet. So we're trying to get the maximum size of plots to eliminate any variance associated with interplot variance. Pat Phipps provided me with copious amounts of data from Virginia. Again, he looked primarily at hardlock. He had a few data sets with regard to leaf spot. In 2004, one of Dr. Phipps' first trials evaluating hardlock, we did see that in the field with 9.3 to 11.9% hardlock, although there were no significant differences with regard to disease development among the treatments, there was some significant differences with regard to the yield. Where the toxin, the 3 applications of a 1/2 pound of toxin significantly improved yields over the untreated control, as did the 2 applications of 1 pound of toxin. However, we did not see that same trend for greater yields with increased applications of toxin at other at a pound per acre. So here we have 2 trials conducted by Dr. Phipps at Smithfield and Charles City. Hardlock severity at Smithfield is about 7.5 to 12.5%. There were significant differences among the treatments. Likewise, there were significant differences at Charles City, about 9.5 to 24%, but there was nothing consistent with regard to the performance of the fungicides across these 2 trials. And again, resulting seed cotton, there were no differences. So in summary, what I've done is gone through and summarized Alabama. In 2008, we had one trial total, 0 significant differences in either yield or disease development. The Florida data set was a little bit complicated because from 2003 to 2007, there were several examples of instances where significant differences were observed, but those were primarily with hardlock, as was the case in Virginia from 2004 to 2008. And unfortunately, there were really no consistent significant differences or effects with regard to fungicides and hardlock. In Georgia, again, Bob's had several years worth of data. In 8 trials that I had access to, there were 0 differences with regard to those 8 trials. 0 for 7 in Louisiana. The data set that Gabe provided me with was 0 for 1. Al Rather provided a data set that we did not include with regard from Missouri. However, there were no differences in that trial as well. Melvin Newman, likewise, has had very little effect on yield with regard to using fungicides. In Texas, in addition to the trials that I've conducted, Robert Lemon, Craig Bednarz, and Wayne Keeling have all conducted trials using fungicides in cotton and varying the water regimes and have seen no benefit with regard to those trials as well. And again, as I mentioned earlier, Virginia, we have seen some differences with regard to fungicides, but it's primarily in hardlocked fields, and unfortunately, it's quite inconsistent. So in conclusion, the foliar and bole rot diseases of cotton, they are experienced annually, and being an extension, I do realize, and I do know that producers are aware of those, and they're concerned when these epidemics do occur. They may be able to use fungicides to reduce the amount of disease that they see in the field, but again, I think that fungicide timing is the critical aspect to look at, getting those preventative applications made. There were no significant differences in yield with regard to the fungicides. No consistent significant differences throughout the trials we looked at. Epidemics occurring late in the season, from the experience that I have in West Texas, may actually help save producers a little bit of money with regard to harvest aid, as these foliar diseases may act as a natural harvest aid, shedding leaves late in the season. From a standpoint of the fungicides overall, they play a critical role in other disease management systems and other cropping systems. Therefore, I think fungicide stewardship is a key point that we need to keep in mind and maintain that with regard to managing diseases across the farmscape and other cropping systems. The risk of resistance is real and prevalent with the single site mode of action fungicides such as the strobilurins, and we need to be cognizant of that in using these products in cotton, peanuts, wheat, and other row crops. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to address any questions you may have or clarify any issues.
Got 4 minutes for questions.
Yes, sir.
It appears that almost all protocols are calling for applications, whether it's once or twice or three times, at exact growth stages. Have any of the university folks done any work looking at disease control where they time their applications based on the onset of disease in each crop? Are these all automatic timings?
I'm not sure when the timings of some of these were. I would have to go back and look at that, but Bob may be able to address that, where he saw significant differences in his aerial at mildew trial. Was that when were those fungicide applications made?
We have been going on trying to find a timing based upon the most likely probability to come in, and the one with the dramatic disease control with what was it by Nasticide, we happened to have the spray in place before the disease came. But that, I would say, my biggest finding here looking at it is the biggest question I have is how do we correct the time of these applications? And that's the biggest question.
I would think that the strobilurins don't have much curative activity on other, you probably couldn't put it on after you had the disease. You've got to put it on before you get it.
Right.
Unless or you wouldn't get much control.
In Louisiana, and I'm sure these are standardized protocols, but they're either at first bloom or 14 days after first bloom. And if you waited in Louisiana to make an application, the onset of symptoms, say you went and you just saw, it would be just almost prior to defoliation, and you'd be putting defoliant out. So you'd be you'd have probably 50 to 60% open bowls. That's when I usually make my ratings.
Well, I know in Texas, the experience that I have in Texas is looking at disease development. Two of the 3 years that I've been there, we've seen significant defoliation associated with alternaria leaf spot. And it's very dependent upon the weather and the condition of the crop. So I think based on, from my experience, recommendations for my growers would be, well, if it's shaping up like a 2006 or 2008, if we have a late season rain event, such as 10 inches of rain in September, like we had this last year, then that's setting it up for a potential problem. But again, it's late enough in the season where those late to mid-September rainfall events, I don't think there's enough time there to impact yield dramatically. There was a question over here. Dr. Starr?
Jason,
I'm sure that where you're in your top crop, where you need a little more push to develop that top crop out, you're probably going to have the biggest impact on that immature fiber in the top crop. But I don't think that, I think the genetic potential of your lower crop is already going to be set based on the experience that I've seen late in the season. If we get something that comes in the first week of August instead of the first week or middle of September, then we're probably going to see the potential for an impact on quality. But unfortunately, the trials we have here did not look at fiber quality, or I did not have access to that data. We do have trials this year looking at fiber quality, but we haven't gotten the HPI samples back yet.